Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. That's the name of this show, Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Dr. Ray Pritchard. Last half hour, I hope you were able to catch our interview with a gentleman who was a former Muslim, now a Christian, and he's written a book about the differences. It's called No God But One, Allah or Jesus? Nabil Qureshi was our guest. And Ray, in the interview, I asked him, well, no, not really asking him, it's sort of, I was saying this as we were going to break. The history of Islam is one of war.
Right, and from the beginning.
From the beginning, that's just a fact. And I cited an example from the 1700s. Thomas Jefferson, yes, that Thomas Jefferson, was our ambassador to Great Britain, I believe. So in the Mediterranean, the northern Mediterranean, off the shores of Africa, there was something called the Barbary Pirates. All right? So these pirates would make the ships, the merchant ships that came through there, through those waters, they would make them pay what's called tributes, are basically, sorry about this, but pay to play, all right?
Right, right.
You want to come through our
you
waters?
You want to come through, you got to pay.
Otherwise, right. Your ship's going down, or we're taking what you got, or enslaving you, or whatever. So
They were pirates.
So yeah. A lot of the countries, this is how Stephen McDowell tells the story of the Providence Foundation, a lot of the countries then just decided to pay the money, and it was easier to do that than fight these pirates. So they just paid them, you know. Well, the Americans came over doing business as a new young country, and the pirates attacked them, and this began to be a real problem with our merchant ships in the Mediterranean. So Thomas Jefferson and John Adams met with the Tripoli ambassador to Great Britain. It was called Tripoli now, what would be modern day Libya, that region where these pirates came from. And the ambassador met with Jefferson and Adams, and basically Jefferson wanted to know what we haven't done anything. He said, we haven't done anything to provoke this. Why are you attacking our merchant ships? And I'm going to quote what the ambassador for Tripoli, the Muslim man, I can't pronounce his name, said to Thomas Jefferson, quote, Islam was founded on the laws of the, Islam was founded on the laws of the Prophet. And it was written in their Quran that, let me get this correct here, because it sounds like I'm quoting Jefferson and the ambassador at the same time. I'm reading from the conservativepost.com, but now this is indisputable. It may be a conservative website I'm reading, but you can find this a lot of places, this encounter and what was said, because Jefferson wrote it down. But he said, this is the ambassador, right? Dre, do you know that? The answer was quite revealing. The ambassador said that that the religion was founded on the laws of the Prophet, and it's written in the Quran that all nations who should not have acknowledged their authority were sinners, the authority of the Quran I'm talking about, and that it was their right, that is the right of Muslims, and duty to make war upon them whoever they could be found, and to make slaves of all who they could take as prisoners, that every Muslim should be slain in battle, was sure to go to paradise. Now, you've read that story, hadn't you, Ray?
Sure, sure. And this is, I mean, these are just facts of history.
Yeah.
Most Americans don't know this, but this is a very true story.
Yeah. So the point is, that Muslims waging war on the rest of the world has been going on since Islam started in the 7th century.
Right.
That's just, again, that's just a fact of history. True?
It's totally true. And as Nabil said, ISIS has been putting out a magazine where they explain why they hate us. So we don't have to guess, Tim.
No, we don't have to guess. But what here's what Obama would say, for example. President Obama would say, that's not really Islam. This is the point we need to I know I sigh too, but he's going to say this is not really Islam.
Right.
This is a death cult. They're not representative of mainstream Islam, no more than the KKK is a representative of Christianity. That's what they're going to say to us. Which what I'm saying here, and I think what you would agree with me on. Okay, take ISIS out of the picture. Let's not even talk about ISIS. Let's talk about the history of Islam, all right, and their aggression around the world. Why is it that not every Muslim is a terrorist, but every act of terrorism in today's modern world is done by Islamists, is Muslim? Why is that? Why is that? Is that just coincidental? So you have to look at that, the history of Islam, to properly understand that it's not a religion of peace. Just not. That doesn't mean there aren't good people who are Muslims. Obviously, that's not true. But it's not a religion. It's a religion of aggression. It's a religion. It's a religion that tries to force people to submit to Islam because they think, the Muslims think, that's what they're supposed to be doing here on planet Earth to please Allah so they can hopefully go to paradise one day. That's why they behead people. They think this makes Allah happy. I go straight to paradise because I cut this Christian's head off. Now, we in the West here, particularly America, we go, that's nuts. Well, it is nuts in a generic description of, you know, we say people are crazy when they do things that are that we don't understand, but they're not crazy in a clinically mentally ill way. Right, Ray?
That's right. Well, if we're just going to take people at face value,
right?
If you go around, you know, exploding cars, bombs, people, and recently, evidently a little child at that wedding over in Turkey, if you go around doing that and you make videos of it and you publish a magazine and you do it repeatedly and you say every time, we are doing this in the name of Islam, then you ought to be taken seriously. This is why they are doing it. This is not apart from their religion. This is for them. This is the logical outgrowth of what their religion has.
That's why they say Allah Akbar.
Right.
It means praise be to God. They're going to cut somebody's head off and they're going to praise God that they did it because it makes Allah happy that they kill. Now, as I say, I know for people in the West and for us as Americans, we go, how do I even wrap my brain around something like that? Well, you can't. But it's true. And I hate to say it, so you have to acknowledge that this theology exists and it's evil. And that's there aren't this many. Somebody who's mentally ill is somebody who runs naked out in the street yelling, that he's a bear. Okay,
right.
Or somebody like that. And there are mentally ill people in the world, but these jihadis are perfectly sane individuals. They just think they're doing something that we would say is evil, that pleases their God for them to do that. And therefore, they're rewarded by Allah for committing these atrocities. What we would call atrocities, they would call acts of honor to God. I'm just telling you, it's too easy just to say, well, these people are crazy. No, they're not crazy. They know exactly what to do, and that's why they can plan these things so well. They're not crazy. They're just they're evil, quite frankly. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We're changing topics now, but I think this next subject will be very interesting for people to hear about, given today's Expenses when it comes to college and higher education. Go ahead, Ray.
Charles Sykes is a senior fellow for the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute. He's a well-known, well-known talk show host on WTMJ Radio in Milwaukee. He's written a number of books, including A Nation of Victims, Dumbing Down Our Kids, a book called Prof Scam. He's come back again and again to the whole question of the crisis in American higher education. And Charlie Sykes has just written a new book called Fail You, Fail You, subtitled The False Promise of Higher Education. Charlie, welcome to today's issues.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
Well, let's just start right here. How'd you get into being interested in this? And then lead us down the road. How did we, it used to be that college was the answer to everything, but boy, there's trouble now. So how did you get interested in this, and how did our universities get in such a mess?
Well, it's actually a passion of mine for some time. My father was a longtime university professor, and he always used to tell me about basically kind of what a scam higher education had become, how little the professors taught, the amount of junk scholarship that they spent their time on. And about 30 years ago, I wrote my first book, Prof Scam, which talked about many of those things. And what I wanted to do was, especially with the college higher education bubble, the $1.3, $1.4 trillion in national in student loan debt, to go back and ask the question, how did things get so much worse? And is it possible that right now we're looking at a higher education bubble? And I think we are.
Well, and what exactly, what is that bubble, and what happens when it bursts?
Well, that's the interesting question. I mean, bubbles burst when people realize that something has become way too expensive. People keep bidding up the price of, for example, housing or tulips or whatever. And then there comes a point where people realize, you know what, this is not as valuable as the amount of money we're paying. And I think that's the crisis in higher education. It's not just that it's become more and more expensive. It's that people are asking, what are we learning? What is the value of that college education? Am I paying out $50,000 a year for political correctness and safe spaces and a variety of other things? Am I actually learning anything? We have students who are saddled with massive amounts of debt and can't get a job. They're working at Starbucks, no disrespect for Starbucks. So I think that's where you get the college education bubble, where the cost has exploded so fast, and now people are asking, what do we get for that money?
What's the name of your book, Charles?
Fail You, The False Promise of Higher Education.
So what should you do, go to trade school or just skip college altogether? Is that what you recommend? Or?
No.
Okay.
I mean, there's no one-size-fits-all. I mean, there are a lot of really good colleges out there. I just think that people need to ask much tougher questions. I mean, I don't think as many people need to go to college as go. I think this whole idea of college for all has been kind of a hoax. I think it's been used to balloon and bloat the size of colleges and universities. But I do think that people need to be much tougher consumers. Instead of just writing out a big tuition check and sending your child off to a school, ask, you know, what are they learning? What, you know, are they actually going to get professors in the classroom? Will they be able to get a job? Are they actually learning values? Are they actually learning about Western civilization? Or have they just been given a curriculum that looks like it was designed by a game show host?
Go ahead, Ray.
So I want to ask you something about these triggers, these microaggressions, these safe spaces. You know, there's a big deal up at the University of Missouri last year, but this seems to be happening all over the country. Who or what is behind this triggering safe spaces, this microaggression stuff?
Well, a lot of it's this culture of political correctness, the idea that we don't treat students as if they are independent thinkers who need to have a liberal education, but rather as people who are frail and fragile, and somehow that they are going to be hurt if they're exposed to ideas or words that they don't like. And quite frankly, the federal government has been pushing a lot of this agenda on the schools to basically say, don't create an unsafe environment. So one of the things that's been happening is, I think, that colleges have become more and more intellectually intolerant and have been pushing an agenda of ideological conformity at a time when they keep jacking up the price tag.
How hard is it to get conservative viewpoints heard on a college campus today?
Well, that's something I talk about in this book. It is extremely difficult, and I think it's becoming more difficult because a lot of conservatives realize, look, you know, I would like to go into academia, I would like to teach, but the environment is just too intense. So every year you have conservative speakers who are disinvited from university campuses, who are, you know, who are told that they are not welcome there. But I think there's a pushback. I do think that one of the things you're seeing is that there's kind of a backlash against this political correctness. You have a lot of groups of conservative students who are realizing that they are not alone. You have even some professors who are pushing back against this. But it is there's no question about it. If you are a conservative, you need to make sure that you're going into an environment where you are at least going to be able to be tolerated, if not celebrated.
Yeah. Let me ask you this about the cost of going to college today, because you're right, so many, we all hear the stories, so many kids, well, by the time they get out of college, they're not kids anymore, they're young adults, but they come out of school with, I don't know, 15, 20, 25,000 more, some a lot more of debt. I have a theory, it's a conspiracy theory, that you may shoot down, Charles, but here's what I think's going on. I have no way to prove this. This is good radio, isn't it? I have absolutely no facts to base this on. It's just a wild conspiracy theory I have about why the costs are so high. Here's why. It's easy money for the students to get their hands on. I'm talking about the loans, all right? So the universities and colleges figure this out. Hey, these kids can get their hands on the money, so why not up the price?
That's exactly right. No, that's not a conspiracy. That's simply the economics of it, and it's been the economics of it for the last 30 or 40 years. The more free money you pump into the system, the higher they raise the tuition. And this is one of the problems with Hillary Clinton's idea of quote-unquote free tuition is the higher education complex will see that as an excuse to keep doing what they're doing, spend more money on administrators and Taj Mahal buildings, and not address any of the problems of value that we're talking about here. But, you know, going back into the 1980s, Bill Bennett, the former Secretary of Education, actually documented every single time you made the money easier, the colleges would raise the tuition. And up until now, let's be honest about it, people were willing to pay that tuition because they figured,
right,
it doesn't matter what happens at camp. It doesn't matter whether my kid learns anything as long as they get that bachelor's degree, because I have to have that bachelor's degree. And I think colleges and universities have taken advantage of that.
Mm. Also, I think you can put there's some of the responsibility on the continual 4 or 5% increase in tuition every year. I'm sure university people would say, well, it's not easy as that y'all are describing it, why the price of tuition has gone up. But the easy money for loans, the schools raise the prices and the kids keep getting more and more loans. Also, the responsibility is on those students, I think, and to some extent their parents, encouraging them to get into this debt. So they get into these, you know, it's kind of like, in a way, you know, you got your party going on. Yeah, everybody likes the party. I'm not saying people go to school just to party, but I'm saying that the party, and I'm using it as metaphorically, party's going on. Then after 4 or 5 years, the party's over, and it's time to pay the bill, you know, time to pay the tab, and you just you don't think about it that much as you go along during the time you're in school until you get to the point where you go, wow, I'm graduating, but here I'm looking at $25,000-$30,000 of debt. Was it worth it? Go ahead.
No, that's exactly right. And in fact, I think a lot of parents and students have never asked about, okay, is this a good financial decision that I'm making here? You know, at least during the housing bubble, you would, if you applied for a loan, they would ask, well, are you going to be able to repay it?
Right.
Most of the time. And then there would be an asset that, you know, in foreclosure. With college loans, you know, when you talk about free money, you don't have to prove you can pay it back. There's no means test.
Right.
And so a lot of people just rack up these massive amounts of debt to, you know, what, study French feminism or flower arranging. Well, you know, it's great to pursue your bliss, but at some point, you need to actually make some intelligent financial decisions. Otherwise, you're going to be in debt for the rest of your life.
We're talking with Charles J. Sykes. He's the author of Fail You, The False Promise of Higher Education. Charlie, what about online courses, online education, which has boomed in the last few years? Is that one part of a possible solution here?
Yes, and it's actually a very exciting part. And it's not your grandfather's online learning. These are called massive open online courses. And they can provide for worldwide continuing learning. And many of them are outstanding courses. They are from elite universities, and you don't have to pay anything for them unless you actually pass them. And you have to prove that you have mastered the subject, you've actually learned something. And this is one of the things that I think is really going to affect the business model of higher education. When people realize, you know, I can, you know, sit in Arkansas and I can take a course from a professor from Yale or from Harvard. I don't have to put up with the political correctness if I don't want to. I can take courses in economics from MIT. And all of these courses, again, once colleges begin offering credit for those courses, then I think that whole tradition of four-year degree, brick-and-mortar, $50,000 a year higher education is really going to be under a lot of pressure.
So if someone is 17 or 18 or 19 years old and they don't want to end up with a $50,000 or $75,000 or $100,000 in debt at the end of 4 or 5 years, what should they be thinking about? Obviously, get a copy of Fail You, The False Promise of Higher Education. But what should they be thinking about to make the right kind of decisions?
Well, again, the answer is going to be very, very different. First of all, ask yourself, do I really need to spend 4 years in college? Do I really need that? Are there alternatives? Are there alternative ways for me to achieve what I want to do? Also, what are my values? What do I believe in? What do I want to learn at the end of my college education? And then find schools that actually take that seriously. Because one of the things I've been writing about for a long time is how indifferent schools are. A lot of universities, frankly, do not care. What a student learns after they will not pay any attention. So I do think you have to ask tough questions and also ask basic questions. Like, for example, will I actually have real professors in the classroom, or am I going to be spluffed off to a teaching assistant? What is the track record of graduates of this school? What percentage of them get jobs? How many of them are unemployed? Ask those questions before you go deeply into debt.
Yeah. Charles Sykes, S-Y-K-E-S, been our guest. Author of Fail You, The False Promise of Higher Education. He's not saying don't go to college.
Nope.
He's saying don't go there without a lot of questions that are answered before you go off and get, as he said, in a lot of debt. Thank you, Charles. Appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you.
All right, you're listening to the radio. You've been listening to the radio program Today's Issues on AFR. Ray, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Tim.
Folks, have a good day. Have a great day. Keep listening to AFR. The Bible teaching program of Dr. Alistair Begg is next, and then the news, and then on with your day here on American Family Radio. We'll see you back here tomorrow for Trivia Friday.